John Gibson, and we're broadcasting today from aboard LST 325, docked near Inland Marina here in Evansville. This ship was among the giant flotilla that delivered Allied troops to the shore of Normandy 70 years ago today. The D-Day invasion was a turning point in World War II, leading to the defeat of Nazi Germany the following year, liberating Europe and ending the Holocaust. If ever the expression living history is appropriate, it's here on this landing ship's tank. Men and women built this type of ship in Evansville along the Ohio River off Ohio Street during the war years. Now, this specific ship was not built here in Evansville, but as I understand it, it's the only LST left that's fully functional. Now, to tell us more about the ship, its past, and its future is Captain Bob Jordan. Captain Jordan, we appreciate you joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure, John.
This afternoon, actually. All right. Well, can you tell us, in a nutshell, give us a brief history of this ship that we're sitting aboard here?
Well, as you kind of alluded to, this ship was built in Philadelphia. They only made 13 LSTs. And then when Evansville Shipyard got going in Seneca, Illinois, and some of the others, they went back to making destroyer escorts and different things. But they made the luckiest one. They made LST 325, and it's got a life, and we plan on having it live for a long time.
And is it the only one that's still seaworthy?
Well, probably not in the world, although I would hate to argue with that point because some of the foreign countries have not taken care of them. And so whether they're seaworthy or they use them for a building, you know, on the shore, but... this one, as everybody knows, we take it out a couple times a year, and we've been to Pittsburgh, we've been up the Mississippi to the Clinton, Iowa, we've been up to Illinois a couple of times, and then we just, a year ago, we went clear down to Port Arthur, Texas, and down to Mississippi. And
yeah. Well, this certainly looks very, very well preserved.
Well, thank you. I got to give tribute to all the wonderful volunteers that this ship has had, and we tell people you come aboard and spend a few days working on it, you're hooked, be back forever, and that's pretty true.
Now, on D-Day, 70 years ago today, can you tell us what LST 325 was doing?
Well, 70 years ago, it was sitting right there at the waters off of Normandy Beach, waiting for the beach to be secured, and then actually it was on the 7th before the LSTs went in and unloaded their tanks. LST 325 was loaded with Sherman tanks. And a lot of people don't realize that LSTs didn't just make one landing. And after they made the landing, another important thing, they took wounded soldiers aboard into the tank deck.
Is that right?
And the Navy had put three doctors on board the LSTs. So we had three emergency operating tables. One right here in the wardroom.
Is that right? And we should point out, we're sitting here in the wardroom today. Right. It's a wood-paneled room here with a couple of couches, a couple of tables, and several portholes. It's not every day we do a program from a place with portholes instead of windows. I'm also told that these aren't doors, these are hatches.
That's correct.
Yeah, we've got to get the terminology correct here.
Yeah, that's kind of a door, though. That's really not a hatch, but...
that's true. That one is more of a door, but yeah, throughout the ship... you've got hatches.
Oh, yeah. We are constantly reminded if we make a mistake in Navy terminology in particular. And a lot of people want to call this a boat, you know. That's pretty... on the river, you have boats. I think we are the only ship. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they want to know the difference between a ship and a boat. Well, a ship carries boats.
That's the best
explanation.
And speaking of that, you have some Higgins boats, as they're called, aboard this ship, correct?
Yes, we do. We carry two. We've got three, and all of them are running operational. And we're given rides today with one of them. We actually could put two in service if we need it.
Yeah, so a lot of folks, we should point out, are visiting today on D-Day, of course. This is, if this isn't living history, I don't know what is. And folks are getting rides in those Higgins boats. Now, those type of boats, is that what, the troops were in when they went ashore in Normandy and places like that?
Yes, the troops went in, to secure the beach. And so they went in Higgins boats or LCVPs. 36, it would carry 36 soldiers, and of course it had a coxswain and an engineer and a and then a deckhand also in there. Mm-hmm. But they, I had to figure out how many. It was like, I don't know how many men. It was a lot of, like 2,000 went in the first day, something like that.
Right, right. Now, the LST that we're sitting on, you generally, it was tanks that you provided on D-Day, more so than soldiers?
Pretty much the tanks went in with the tanks on the first invasion. And once you got the tanks on the beach, you know, you had it pretty well secured. Mm-hmm. Before that, all you had was your M1 rifle, and the enemy would have tanks and big guns. It was pretty hard to keep a beach.
Right. So. Now, this D-Day has been referred to as the longest day, and the name of a famous movie that depicts the D-Day landing and all of that. More recently, we've seen depictions of it in Saving Private Ryan, for example. It looked like, it looked like just a horrific experience.
You know, I'm with you. I've been to the movies, and I've heard some guys that were there. I don't know that we can have it described to us how horrible it was. Uh-huh. I mean, the ocean was actually red from blood, and we had these guys were all men, of course, and that was back when men were men, and but
they were all young men.
They were all young men, and what they did in making Normandy landing successful was only, I think, probably, you know, Americans can do that, because they, as they say, you could kill the officer in charge, but the next enlisted man would step up and take over.
And as I understand it, some of the troops going on land in the Higgins boats, like the ones you have here on LST 325, 100% losses, some of them. As I understand it, some troops never even made it to the shore. They just
cut
down the ocean.
You know, we did not have those pillboxes, and they were very well dug in and very thick cement.
And the pillboxes you're talking about,
yeah,
those
the
are
pillboxes,
German.
And so they were still
the Germans
there.
Germans were firing back.
They had machine guns and fairly good-sized artillery pieces, along with mortars. So, yes, a lot of LCVPs never made it. Mm-hmm. And some would hit the holes, so to speak, that were maybe from our battleships, actually, and thinking they were on the shore, and they weren't. And then with a full pack of over 100 pounds, these guys would go off the LCVP and go into the hole. And drowned, basically. It was a lot of,
obviously, a lot of death that day.
Yes.
But but I'm sure, as you and most Americans agree, it's an effort that had to be done.
Well, as they know, we had to get on the shores of Europe to defeat Hitler. And of course, the LST was something they developed to just do that. Mm-hmm. And because they needed something, as Winston Churchill said, have great ships made that can carry heavy equipment into the beaches.
Right.
We did that. We made 1,051 in a little over 3 years. We never had enough LSTs, actually, but I've heard there's like 225 at Normandy.
Really?
And Eisenhower didn't think he had enough. Mm-hmm. So... we never lost an invasion once we had the LST developed.
I see. Well, let's flash forward to modern day here. I'm seeing a lot of visitors here today on the 70th anniversary. What can people expect to see when they come to visit this ship?
Well, they're going to see a 1942 ship, and if they've ever been on anything else modern, it's quite a contrast, of course. there was no air conditioning, a lot of things that we take for granted today. There wasn't any mattresses that you could change the softness of it. You had a canvas bottom. But these guys were 18, 19 years old, and they didn't know a lot of difference. They didn't have air conditioning at home either.
Right, right.
But they'll see that. They'll see the 40 millimeters as they were, and the 20 millimeter guns.
In the large area where the tanks would roll out of the ship?
The big feature of this ship is a tank deck that's 230 feet long and 30 feet wide and 14 feet high. So it's quite a amazing sight, actually, when you go through some of the troop compartments that are fairly small, and then you enter into this cavern. That's our tank deck, and mm-hmm. it would hold 20 Sherman tanks. And those tanks weighed 30 tons apiece.
Wow. And somehow it all floats.
And it floats. it might roll around floating, but it floats.
All right. Well, as we know, the city of Evansville's contract with the LST runs out next year. Have you received any more information about that offer from Peoria, Illinois?
No, they couldn't get it together at the last board meeting up there, so mm-hmm. now they're talking the 28th of June, and I certainly hope we get that. I think we've drugged this out way too long.
Right.
And
so you just like to see what they have to offer compared to what Evansville
has?
Yeah,
we kind of promised that, basically.
Sure.
And they were going to put us right at the riverfront, which was a very enticing spot for us to be. But there's also drawbacks, and they're up the Illinois River, and we like to sail, so we got to go about 16 hours down the Illinois every time, and then mm-hmm. it's also colder in Peoria. But so you got plus and minuses.
Right.
Well, any decision we make will be made for the best interest of the LST 325.
Have any other cities expressed interest?
Well, Jeffersonville did for a while, but they really don't have a place for us. I mean, we just can't pull this ship into just anywhere. You got to have a pier and a spot for it to fit.
Sure.
So.
Well, I know regardless of whether the ship stays or goes eventually, I understand you're going to be taking part in a reenactment of D-Day on Evansville's riverfront. Can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, I'm kind of in the dark on that, but except that I know we're going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what time we're going to get underway.
I believe it's during the Shriners Fest.
Correct? Yes, it'll be in the afternoon. I'm assuming around 1 o'clock, and we're going to go down there and with the ship, and we'll be firing the 40 millimeters, which fire with
blanks, I hope.
Well, propane. Yeah, we won't take out the couple of bank buildings. But no, it's a propane. It costs us 2 cents a shot, but uh-huh. they sound real. And in fact, we got smoke comes out of the ends. But
my oh my!
And then we got, I believe, a LCVP full of reenactors that'll.
So you'll be letting go of at least one of the Higgins boats.
One of the Higgins boats, and they're going to land down there in the cement, and they're going to attack it and kill all the Germans that are there on the
Yeah, I understand there are going to be some folks playing the roles of German troops, right?
That's the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got a seaplane. They've got a seaplane lined up, and I believe we're going to throw off a dummy, so to speak, Oscar, we call him, and the seaplane's going to come in and then rescue him out of the water.
I see. Well, that should be a very...
And I hope they can catch him as he goes past the gambling boat. But anyway.
Well, that should be a fun, interesting, and exciting reenactment. And noisy, too, for that matter. A little taste of World War II there, I guess.
Well, I got some trigger-happy people on here, and they really like to shoot. Now, you mentioned blanks. They cost $7 a piece. So,
I see.
So 2 cents is a lot of...
So a more economical way to go about it.
So...
Well, Captain Jordan, we certainly appreciate you chatting with us here. Good luck to you. I know there's at least one petition drive going on that folks hope the ship stays in Evansville, and we hope you will. But whatever is best for the LST, as you say, we understand where you're coming from, and good luck to you.
Well, I'm certainly got a push to get an answer shortly after June 20th.
Sooner rather than later, right?
Right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Captain Jordan. Well, coming up on The Trend, we'll hear from my colleague Cass Harrington. She attended a D-Day ceremony this morning on the deck of the ship. We'll also speak to Mary Bauer and Tom Lonberg of the Evansville Museum about a current WW2 exhibit at the museum and a traveling Holocaust exhibit that's in the works. We'll also visit with Jack Buttram, who's leading the effort to build a World War II museum here in Evansville. And I'll have a few words about this anniversary and my own father. This is The Trend on WNIN. I'm John Gibson. Stay with us.
support comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039. Support also from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at rabintire.com. You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM. This is a special trend live from the LST 325 docked at the marina in Evansville. Let's go back now to John Gibson.
Welcome back to LST 325. We're broadcasting from the ship on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, the Allied invasion that changed the course of World War II in Europe. This ship, of course, was part of that great invasion. Joining us now on The Trend is our own Cass Harrington. She attended a memorial service aboard the ship this morning. Cass, glad you could join us here. Can you tell us how was this service this morning?
Well, John, nearly 100 veterans assembled on the LST 325 for the D-Day service at 0900 this morning.
Right.
But the remembrance ceremony was for the soldiers who weren't there.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
While most of the attendees were seated on the deck, World War II Navy veteran Jack Stevenson stood on the side, taking a video of the ceremony. Stevenson says he lost many friends on this day 70 years ago.
That were on the Omaha Beach and Utah Beach D-Day. I have breakfast with one of my buddies, and he was in the 2nd Battalion Rangers that climbed the cliffs at Point du Hoc. And I had breakfast with him of a morning, so he's told me quite a bit about it. And
what does he tell you?
Well, I don't like to talk about it, and he don't either, so.
The morning's rituals, the firing of 21 shots by military detail, and the ringing of the ship's bell were solemn reminders of those who gave their lives.
Dear Lord, today on this 70th anniversary of D-Day, we honor the memories of all the veterans that have gone before us, of all services. We honor sacrifice, the willingness to give of oneself for country. The sacrifice of so many who have given their time and their talents and sometimes their lives so that we could enjoy the freedom we have today.
After the invocation, two veteran sailors processed to the railing and tossed a wreath into the Ohio River. They stood in a silent salute to their fallen brothers and sisters. Here's LST 325 Ship Memorial President Kenneth Frank.
70 years ago today, the deck that we're standing on, think about this, was sitting off the beach in Omaha, at Omaha Beach in France, ready to start to do what LSTs were designed to do. The United States put almost 200,000 troops ashore on D-Day. 2,500 Americans died that morning. About 2,000 Canadians and British died that morning. And 15,000 to 20,000 were injured. So it was a traumatic and important day. It was the turning tide of the war.
During his closing remarks, Frank encouraged the D-Day observance to continue after the ceremony.
As you go about your day today, take a minute and think about what happened 70 years ago and those unbelievably brave young men who stormed that beach and what it means to us today and what they did for us. They deserve at least that. Thank you. May God bless them. May God bless the United States of America.
Cass Harrington, WNIN News.
Well, Cass, it sounds like it was a pretty special morning here on LST 325.
It was very moving. And you know, John, actually the highlight for me was speaking with that veteran before the service started. Mm-hmm. And actually, we're going to play the full interview. His name is Jack Stevenson. He was a radio man, second class in the Navy, and he drove up here from Moline, Illinois. And he's actually going back home right now at noon, because on Monday he's going to Normandy.
Really?
That's where he'll be. So let's have a listen to our conversation.
I was a radioman second class in World War II and Korea, and I was never on an LST, which I'm glad of. I was in the Pacific all during World War II. I was a radioman on a destroyer escort. I didn't get there till the end. I seen a few of my people or friends leave at Iwo Jima and Okinawa. This war, this ship was in an entirely different war. So I got to leave and go home. I live in northern Illinois in Moline. I got to leave at noon. I'm flying out Sunday morning to France. I'm going to be in Normandy Monday morning, be at a chateau there on Omaha Beach. So,
what will it mean to you to go back there?
Well, I was in the Pacific all during the war, but I have a lot of friends that were on the Omaha Beach and Utah Beach D-Day. I have breakfast with one of my buddies, and he was in the 2nd Battalion Rangers that climbed the cliffs at Point du Hoc. And I have breakfast with him of a morning, so he's told me quite a bit about it. And
what does he tell you?
Well, I don't like to talk about it, and he don't either. So, yeah. He lost a lot of friends over there. Lost, and for no reason as far as we could see. The way the world is nowadays, I don't know if we've done the right thing or not. I think we should have let it went down the drain. So that's just my opinion.
Well, I imagine today on the anniversary, you're probably flooded with a lot of memories.
Oh, yeah.
What have you been thinking about?
Well, I lost a lot of friends in the Pacific that I'll never see. Like I say, we're having the ceremonies here this morning. As far as I'm concerned, this is for all the guys that didn't come back. So, I used to live in Evansville in the 1930s. I went to grade school here, so this is not new to me down here. So,
what is your, do you have a good memory of the Navy? What's your best
memory? Well, I had good memories and bad memories. Both, everybody does, yeah. What is it they say you spend 99% of your time bored to death, and the other percent you're losing your mind trying to catch up. That's the way it usually works. So
my dad, he told me he was on a carrier, and he would watch the sun go up, the sun go down, he thought, what's the meaning of life?
Well, that DE I was on, we were running the submarine patrols for the Jeep carriers in the Pacific. I don't know if you saw the shows lately on television with the Taffy 1, 2, and 3 in the Philippines, when our destroyer escorts was bouncing the 5-inch shells off of the Japanese cruisers and battleships. Well, I was there, Taffy 1, 2, and 3, I was there with our ship guarding our Jeep carrier, and that's what they were doing.
So that was Jack Stevenson,
who
I met this morning before the service. But one other clip that ties into your discussion this morning with the captain,
right,
is the mayor. Mayor Lloyd Winicky was the guest of honor at today's ceremony, and he was really, really highlighting the significance of this ship.
On June 5th and 6th, 1944, some 5,300 vessels crossed the English Channel to invade Europe and free it from Nazi tyranny. 5,300. There were 229 LSTs in that armada. It was the largest invasion in the history of the world. 25 of those LSTs were built here in Evansville. Of the more than 1,000 LSTs produced at the Evansville shipyard, more than 1,000 of them survived World War II. But as we all know, there's only one fully operational LST left today. And we're here. We're on it. It's a veteran in North Africa, of Sicily, Salerno, and yes, Operation Overlord, the Normandy invasion, D-Day. We were sitting, standing on that ship today, the LST 325, to celebrate the sacrifice and honor this ship's role in changing the world. Evansville is proud to have LST 325 as its home port, and we're proud to celebrate the great heritage and history that the Evansville community has with its contribution in the war. On behalf of the entire citizens of Evansville, thank you to all of our veterans. Thank you to the crew and the board of the LST 325 for your great commitment to restoring heritage. Thank you.
You can hear a little bit of a barge in the background finishing up his statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounded, obviously, as you said, that the mayor is pointing out how significant this ship is to Evansville, and I'm sure he's implying that he wants to see it stay here.
Certainly.
Most indeed. All right, well, Cass, thank you very much. That's our own Cass Arrington. She attended that memorial service this morning here on the deck of LST 325. You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson, and we're coming to you today from the wardroom aboard LST 325. This room has been used for a number of purposes over the years, including some hospital work, some surgery, some meetings. I believe someone told me there was a court-martial in here once. But today we're doing it, we're on the radio, we're broadcasting here to talk about this ship and this day in history. Joining us now on The Trend is Mary Bauer and Tom Lundberg from just down the river a bit, the Evansville Museum. Now, the museum is showing a World War II exhibit through July 6th, and a traveling Holocaust exhibit is in the works. Well, can you tell us, we'll start with you, Tom Lundberg. Can you tell us about this World War II exhibit that's currently displayed at the Evansville Museum?
The exhibition is Legacies of World War II, and the impetus for it was the 70th anniversary of D-Day. It showcases collections of people from around the area that collect World War II material, showing the ongoing legacy of the war through what people have chosen to commemorate within their own collections, whether that's a personal collection or a public collection, such as the Evansville Museums or the Indiana Military Museum up in Vincennes. Mm-hmm. But we're very fortunate that a number of people were willing to share the material with us. We have a wide range of uniforms showcasing U.S. troops, British troops, German, Italian, Finnish, Russian, Japanese. Rather shows the whole breadth of the war through the breadth of the exhibition.
Yeah. You got lots of artifacts. I'm impressed that you've got uniforms from all over the world, it sounds like, including enemy forces. Well, tell us about some more of those artifacts. Anything particularly unusual?
Well, I think what is really striking is we have a collection from George Rehnquist in Princeton. He's been involved with the museum over the years very generously. He has a collection of material that really focuses on the British aspects of the war, the RAF, the Battle of Britain, which were a few very outnumbered fighter pilots, outnumbered by a ratio of 8-1 by the German Luftwaffe, held off their attack in 1940 to preserve England as they stood alone against the might of Nazi Germany. And I think it's very interesting to look at that, just the backbone of that country, which was inspired by their Prime Minister Winston Churchill. So I think Mr. Rehnquist's collection really points to that spirit of the war. That certainly was a part of the American spirit also, that whatever it took was what we were going to do in order to accomplish the victory over the Axis powers.
Yeah. Now, Mary Bauer, you're the interim director at the Evansville Museum. As we've talked about, World War II veterans are disappearing, of course. Have many of them come to the museum to see this exhibit?
This has been a very popular exhibit. We have more and more people coming. In fact, Tom just gave a tour of a veterans group yesterday, so we're very pleased with the response from our community.
So you're saying all ages?
All ages. All ages are very interested in this topic on this very important anniversary.
Yeah. Now, on that other end of the scale, Tom, I can ask you this one. Are children learning about the war through this exhibit?
Well, our goal is that through the generations, people will remember this. That'll be shared from generation to generation because, of course, as everybody knows, we are losing the greatest generation now very rapidly. And that's why it's so important we do this at the 70th, and that they will instill this to their kids and on through the generations. And we have seen even yesterday when the reunion group was touring that there are grandfathers with grandchildren coming through the exhibit in order to help them learn about what was the monumental event of the 20th century and one of the monumental events in world history.
That's Tom Lundberg. We're also talking with Mary Bauer, both from the Evansville Museum. You can join the conversation at 426-7400. Again, that's 426-7400. And we can get you on the air here, hopefully, from the LST 325. Well, speaking of children, how do we teach children about this war, something that must seem like ancient history to them?
It does. Studying World War II, studying the Holocaust, we really want to have people think about the use and abuse of power, the roles, responsibilities of institutions, organizations and nations when confronted with human rights violations.
Now, I understand that another exhibit, this one from the Holocaust, is in the works for the Evansville Museum. We did talk about it on WNIN following a news event a couple of weeks ago. Mary, can you remind us just what that is and you know, when it's coming up?
This exhibit is called Through the Eye of a Needle, Fabric of Survival. It will open in the museum's old gallery on September 7th and run through the Thanksgiving weekend. This is a nationally touring exhibition of fabric art created by a woman named Esther Krenet, who was a survivor of the Holocaust from Poland.
Now, I understand you've already received, you're in the work, in the process of setting it up, is that right?
Actually, the work is at the museum. We are opening the crates, doing some condition reporting, but the installation won't be until late August, and the show will open in September.
I see. So it takes a while to get that all.
It does.
Yeah. Now, would you describe those fabrics as inspirational?
They really are. Esther was a 15-year-old girl who, with her younger sister, escaped. Really, all of her family was killed during the war. She and her sister endured 2 years of hiding from the Nazis. They stayed and became part of a farm family and survived. And it wasn't until she was here in the United States, had a family of her own. When she was 50 years old, she began to tell her story in beautiful, incredible, detailed fabric works of art.
And I'm guessing, is it sort of an emotional experience to set it up?
It really is. She really is a wonderful artist, and she tells the story of her life, and it really is, it's very inspirational because she contrasts really the desolation and horror of the war with her sense of survival and love of life and beauty.
Yeah. Now, I should point out that WNIN-TV will be broadcasting some programs to coincide with the Holocaust exhibit, and I know our station, the folks here, we're pleased to provide that. You mentioned it begins in September.
It begins in September, opens September 7th, runs through the Thanksgiving holiday, and in conjunction with this, CyPRIS, which is the Committee to Promote Respect Schools, is helping to organize over a dozen programs, lectures, concerts, art workshops, films throughout the community.
I see. And Tom Lundberg, how much longer will the World War II exhibit be up?
It runs through Sunday, July the 6th.
I see. So folks should get down there within the next month.
Well, they should, and we're glad that it's going to still be there over the July 4th holiday, Independence Day, another very appropriate time to recall the sacrifices that are have been made for many generations to keep our country free and as we enjoy it today.
And as you mentioned, in addition to this exhibit, you do have an exhibit that's always there about the history of the home front effort.
A continuing exhibit that looks at home front Evansville and all the things that were happening here in our city that contributed to the Allied effort during the war. And the Evansville Shipyard is a major part of that, the building, the LSTs, the landing ship tanks, and the men and women who are very important to that effort to build these ships, to build airplanes, to produce ammunition that were vital, very vital to supplying the U.S. troops, but also the troops that were also under siege by the Axis powers.
Yeah, we've talked a lot today, obviously, about the ship and the ship building, but also we were building planes here.
The P-47 Thunderbolts,
yeah,
which were a part of Normandy also, very powerful planes. They were bombing planes, they were fighter planes, and sort of the old saying is that if you were in a P-47, well, the saying was if you wanted to send a picture back to your girlfriend, you stood next to a P-51, sort of the sexy plane of the day, but if you wanted to get back to see your girl, you'd fly a P-47.
I see. Yes.
It was a very strong plane.
Very good. All right. Well, I'd certainly like to thank Mary Bauer and Tom Lundberg from the Evansville Museum. Thank you for joining us, and we're very happy to spread the word about these exhibits and hope that folks will come out and take a look.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, well, coming up on The Trend, we'll be talking to Jack Buttram and also Mark Browning. They will tell us about the Freedom Heritage Museum. That's a facility that's in the works. We'll get the latest on that. and much more coming up on The Trend on WNIN-FM. With us.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM. Today's show, a special broadcast from the LST 325 on the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. Hosts John Gibson and Cass Harrington interviewing some folks from the museum there, from the LST and from the Evansville Museum. And next, coming up next, we'll talk about the Airplane Museum. That's up next on The Trend on WNIN-FM.
Aboard LST 325, I'm John Gibson on this 70th anniversary of D-Day. Of course, if you're listening to the replay of the show on Sunday, well, it's obviously past the D-Day anniversary, but still a lot to talk about here and a great on this great ship. Let's bring in Jack Buttram. He's the executive director of the Freedom Heritage Museum that's in the works for Evansville. Also joining us in that effort is Mark Browning. We'd like to thank both of you for joining us this morning. Well, first of all, I think we wanted to clarify something we were talking about earlier, and that's this reenactment of D-Day that's coming up during the Shriners Fest. Jack, can you tell us exactly when that's going to happen and what all is going to be going on?
Sure, and if I make a mistake, Mark will correct me.
Okay.
We're glad to have the LST as a part of it, and the LST is, as a matter of fact, going to go out into the water and bring our USA invaders close to the shore.
I see.
We will use the Higgin boat. We will start that at 12:15.
And what is the date on that?
That's June the 14th. Okay. That's Saturday, June the 14th.
Right.
We will start it at 12:15.
Okay.
We will have an announcer. Brad Bird is going to do the announcing for us. He will tell the audience what's happening. There'll be the LST out into the river. The Higgins boats will come to shore, and they'll be met by some German resistance. That resistance will be pretty tough.
So there will be some folks there portraying German officers and troops?
That's right. We hope that we win the war. Uh-huh. We will be supported by two P-47 Thunderbolts, who will be providing air support for our invasion. These two P-47 Thunderbolts are coming in town. They were built in Evansville. They are Evansville-built P-47s, and they will be providing that air support. We hope that the battle's over by 1 o'clock.
I see. Well, that should be quite the spectacle. That sounds great. And, we'll be pulling for you to take Dress Plaza.
We are also providing, and Mark Browning can tell us about the what we're providing to our veterans at the Old National Bank so that they can see what's happening out there.
It's a ticket only, but it's the top floor of the Old National Bank at from 10 in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon for veterans and their families of World War II. We have about 40 veterans of World War II and their families at the present time. A total of about 125 people will be able to view the whole event in good air conditioning and with some food. But that's a service that the Freedom Heritage Museum is providing to the elderly that gave us our freedom.
Yeah. That is quite a great view from up there in the Old National Bank building as well. So that should be nice. Well, let's talk about the Freedom Heritage Museum. We've heard a lot about it. Where does exactly what is it going to be? Jack, perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about the Freedom Heritage Museum.
Freedom Heritage Museum is an effort by some of us here in town to preserve and honor and recognize the efforts of Evansville during World War II. As perhaps you have already heard, per capita, Evansville, Indiana did more war production than any city ever has and probably ever will.
Yeah.
With a population of about 120,000, we had 80,000 people into production.
Wow.
We built over 300 different pieces of war good. And, of course, we will be highlighting also the folk from Evansville who participated, our local heroes.
Now, where's the project stand at this point, Mark? Is the museum, do you have a location yet?
We have 16 board members, and we're not announcing any location at the present time, but it's in the works and should be at sometime in the near future. Hopefully we will have a hangar, and we will have a P-47, not in the immediate future, but a hangar will allow us to bring other planes here called from the Commemorative Air Force. They have 167 in their fleet, a lot of warbirds that will allow different people in Evansville to be able to experience those different types of planes.
So is a location at the airport still a possibility?
If when we do announce, when we have everything certain of what we do have, it'll be near the airport, so it'll be easy access, because our air museum is unique in that we're going to have planes that fly. If you go around the country, there's 238 certified air museums, but many of them don't have flying airplanes. We're going to try to have flying airplanes, also simulators on board, mm-hmm. and work in the with the STEM program with the school system, so simulators, multiple ones, can show them team work and get the experience of flying. That means science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And to fly, you need to use every one of those skills.
Yeah. Now, this is The Trend on WNIN-FM. We're speaking with Mark Browning and Jack Buttram of the Freedom Heritage Museum. Jack, can you tell us what's been collected so far for this project?
We have a P-47 engine. We have a T-6 airplane. We have some interesting other things. For instance, we have the original construction drawings of the Republic Aviation plant.
Which, of course, became the Whirlpool plant.
Which became the Whirlpool plant, but it was the obviously the production of P-47s. They built 6,500 of them here.
Wow. That's a lot of planes.
Yeah, it is.
So,
we also have from the National Archives in Washington, D.C. and College Park, Maryland, the original description of the P-47 and all the logistical nightmares that had to go through to get that plant produced and the production line. We also went to Chicago, and we have all the archives from Chicago about the P-47, the LST, and also our ammunition plants around here. So we have all that original information. That's a little different than the newspaper, because newspapers are not allowed to print everything at that time. So it will be a great library for other people.
Fascinating. And talking about the P-57, P-47, pardon me, that were being built out there at Republic Aviation, a lot of the folks who were building those planes were women, correct? Rosie the Riveter types.
That's correct. Another one of our highlights of our museum. We will have stories of the Rosie the Riveters.
We have close to 120 veterans of World War II on videotape that are in our archives, and many of them are Rosie Riveters, many of them are flyboys that were flying the P-47s, so uh-huh. We have direct accounts of what they did during that time. But this was an amazing plant to produce 6,700 planes. At the end of production, they were making about 1,000 a month. They were making 10 that rode off that line every day, and to make a plane of that type that quickly is amazing. We got the E awards. There's an E that Jack has on his shirt, but we got an E award. There's only 4% of workplaces in World War II got the E award, and Evansville got 4 E awards for its different plants, and Republic Air was one of them. Very difficult to get the E award.
So obviously a lot going on here on the home front during World War II. Well, so what's needed to make this museum happen? Jack, where do we stand? What more do you need?
We will eventually go to the public for support.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't developed our plans totally to the point where we were ready yet to do that. But we will be going to the public sometime within the next 6 or 7 months asking for support. We will have our plans in order. We will be able to tell the committee, the city, exactly what we're doing, exactly where we will be, uh-huh. and how we're going to do it.
So any idea on when you'd like to get the museum open? Do you have a timeline at this point, Mark?
Well, not tomorrow, but once we have a hangar, then our next project will be filling it with simulators, many simulators, so students and parents, grandparents can experience that. and a P-47 plane, but also other planes from World War II that will allow passengers to be on them. The P-47 has only one place to sit. It only has a pilot seat.
Yeah, it's a pretty tiny plane, wasn't it?
Well, it was it's 17,000 pounds fully loaded. If you look at the Doolittle Run, those were B-25s. They were 17,000 without a load. So these were pretty heavy planes when they were loaded. They were a P-51 and the Zero were about 9,000 pounds, a lot less, about a half size of these. These were called the Jug, and they're a very sturdy plane, and they did an awful lot of damage. They could drop bombs, as somebody else said earlier, drop bombs. They could strafe. They could stop trains, drop bombs, and had extra gas tanks to make extra links. So they were not just a fighter. They were a bomber as well. They were a very versatile plane that helped this D-Day that we're celebrating or commemorating today.
Yeah. Jack, can you tell us how important is it to you to develop this museum?
I was in the seventh grade, and I listened to President Roosevelt and his Day of Infamy. And we youngsters didn't really know what was going on, but my teacher cried.
Yeah.
My brother was in the Marine Corps. I went to college after the war with an awful lot of ex-GIs. It's become a passion for me. I'm really passionate about what we're doing. Evansville and the heroes here need to be recognized. I believe Tom mentioned this, the greatest generation. We're going to lose them. I get emotional when I think about it.
Right.
I really do.
And as we sit here on LST 325, a ship that took part in the D-Day invasion, Mark, I'm guessing you'd like to see this ship stay docked in Evansville?
Well, I've had 24 years plus of Navy service. My father was on the ship. It was a 628 LST during World War II. He was in the invasion of Okinawa, which was actually a bigger production than D-Day that we're celebrating today. It was April 1st of 1945, and the Great Flotilla invaded Okinawa at that time.
Right.
This ship should stay here. My father, when it came to town in around 2005, it was a 14 days of tour, 35,000 people attended, and he never left the ship for 14 days about. And his health wasn't the best, but it went up and down. It was in his blood. It taught him a lot of things about the world, and he pass these things on to me, which I have to pass on to my sons, and other people that are listening need to pass on to their family. Because if we don't understand, history repeats itself, and if we don't understand the lessons from World War II and the lessons of our great city, how we produced 167 LSTs, 167 cornfield LSTs, more than any other in the United States, any other plants, other ship production. We were 1.4% of all ship productions, and the highest percentage of any other LST factory in the United States.
Yeah.
We made them here, so it really historically should stay here, and our city, our children, our grandchildren, our next 10 generations need to marry this ship to understand the significance of World War II and how it helped us win it.
Jack, how important is it, as you see it, to keep LST 325 here?
It's important for a lot of, Mark just mentioned a lot of different reasons, but it's important to our museum, to the Freedom Heritage Museum.
Uh-huh.
We are expecting to work together with the Evansville Museum. We're expecting to work together with the LST group. We see a sort of a heritage trail with these three museums and the War Museum up at Vincennes. It's a wonderful opportunity to put us all together and really draw the tourists into here.
Right.
So aside from the passion of having a war relic here, we need the LST.
Right. That's Jack Buttram. He's on the, well, you're the, what is your official title with the Freedom Heritage Museum?
I was the only one not working.
You see.
And I was free, uh-huh. And I'm the executive director.
There you go. And Mark Browning?
I'm the chairman of the collections committee, and I'm working, so I don't have as much time as Jack.
I see. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us today, and good luck with your Freedom Heritage Museum project. We'll all be looking forward to it for sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, on the 70th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy, it only takes simple math to realize why World War II veterans are disappearing in droves. An 18-year-old soldier taking part in D-Day would be 88 today. That's well beyond the average life expectancy. Now, what those young men did that day and throughout World War II is nothing short of saving humanity. Their heroic and horrific battles, as well as the giant effort on the home front, would eventually free the world from Nazi Germany and imperialist Japan. Tom Brokaw titled his book about the people who fought and endured the war, The Greatest Generation. But that term has been repeated so many times that people are understandably tired of it, including veterans who insist they weren't heroes. Many baby boomers and younger generations have questioned the greatness of the so-called Greatest Generation. If they were so great, they ask, why did they allow the world to slip into financial depression and world war? Now, it can be argued that it was the older generation of the 20s and 30s that deserves blame for the worldwide calamities, if any one group really deserves blame. And the blame game, of course, can be pointless. So let's focus more on the people who grew up during the Great Depression and who fought and died in World War II, including my own father. Like many World War II veterans, he didn't talk much about his years in the Navy. It was as if he couldn't let go of the warning, loose lips sink ships, even though the war ended long ago. But over the years, I came to learn he was a medic aboard a ship in the Pacific Ocean. And in more recent years, he told me his ship was not far from Hiroshima when the first atomic bomb was dropped. Now, of course, a few days later, another A-bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, and Japan surrendered, not knowing the U.S. didn't have another nuclear weapon ready yet. So my dad and so many others avoided a massive invasion of Japan, one that almost certainly would have been a more deadly event than D-Day. And like the droves of World War II veterans I mentioned earlier, my dad is no longer around for this anniversary, having died in 2012 at the age of 88. Like so many veterans, gone but not forgotten. This is The Trend on WNIN-FM. We'd like to thank the folks here at LST 325 for allowing us to come aboard and broadcast today's program. I'd also like to thank our guests, Captain Bob Jordan, Mary Bauer and Tom Lonberg from the Evansville Museum, and Jack Buttram, and also Mark Browning, who was a last-minute addition here, so I didn't have his name jotted down. Mark, we appreciate you being here as well. They're from the Freedom Heritage Museum. Also, a big thanks to my colleagues, Cass Harrington, Steve Berger, our engineer, Zach Genzel, and the team back at the Carpenter House. Daniel Moore is there with Steve. I'm John Gibson. Thank you for joining us for The Trend. This is WNIN-FM Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro. With your continuing support, we're building a better tri-state together. Make it a great day.